Hello, members of the Lasting Supper. Welcome to another Meet a Member podcast. Today I'm talking with a TLS member, Gregory Leese, in California. Hello, Greg.
Hello.
How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing great today.
Good, good. How does it sound? How does it sound to you now?
I still got a little bit of static here, but that's okay.
Oh, okay.
It often happens on these longer calls. I talk to somebody over in China periodically, and it's almost always staticky. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Where are you?
I'm in an area just south of Seattle called University Place, Washington. It's kind of a suburb of the city of Tacoma, which is Seattle's kind of sister city to the south.
Oh, okay. Okay. How long have you been there?
Actually, you know, I was born in Tacoma.
Oh, okay.
And have kind of grown up in and around here. I lived in Europe for 5 years. Mm-hmm. In Germany, mm-hmm. And out and about a bit, but mostly within 10 or 15 miles of here.
Oh, okay. Well, I just wanted to, I'm really looking forward to talking with you. We try to keep it around 20 minutes because people don't want to try to have to listen to something so long, but
sure.
I just want sort of get you introduced. I know you're really active on the Lasting Supper. I really appreciate that, and most people know you there, but maybe they don't know a lot about you, so I'm just interested to know just a little bit of your story. How did you find your way to the Lasting Supper, and why are you comfortable
well,
there?
Yeah, I found my way to you at when you were just had davidhayward.ca, I think.
Yeah.
And
that was a long time ago.
Probably through, it must have been through the Naked Pastor.
Right.
Somehow. I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
I just figure these things work out well sometimes, and I'm not quite sure how, and I don't really need to know how.
Yeah. What's a little bit of your story?
Well, you know, I grew up in the United Methodist Church. When I was a kid, my mother, you know, had always been in mainline congregations, and we lived around the corner from a Methodist church. So,
right.
You know, I can remember going to vacation Bible school and Sunday school and all those kinds of things. And then, when I got out of school, I kind of went, well, that was just part of being a kid, you know,
uh-huh.
and went my own way. And went off to college, where of course the main subjects were getting drunk and getting laid and mm-hmm. and those important kinds of things, along with a little bit of academics.
Mm-hmm.
But it was when I was about 22. I'd been in a relationship with a gal, and she'd kind of fled the relationship, and then had come back and told me that she'd met Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a black sheep, a real black sheep from an evangelical family. And so I went, well, if she believes this, maybe there's something to it, you know?
Right.
And got a couple of New Testaments and sat down in my bedroom and just said, God, if you're really there, I want to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus showed up. It was kind of an interesting situation. It was like my whole metabolism shifted. I just turned around and started walking the other way, which I guess is what, you know, conversion is really supposed to be all about.
Uh-huh.
But very quickly got involved with a bunch of real on fire young Christians at a Pentecostal church, and of course sucked down, you know, everything I heard, of course, just I assimilated and ended up a couple of years. I got married, and then a couple of years later, went off to with Youth with a Mission and spent 5 years with Youth with a Mission in Germany.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And very involved in doing that and leading various things. And so that, you know, and then left there and came back to the States, and really wasn't sure what I was doing in the States, but got a job, you know, had to support my young family, And then a friend of mine said, why don't you come back? I'd been in the National Guard during college. And he said, why don't you come back in the Guard? And, you know, just as a weekend warrior kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I'd have a look at it. And it turned out I ended up coming back in the Guard for a year. And they offered me a full-time job, active duty.
Wow.
And so I ended up spending 25 and a half years on active duty with the National Guard, which has turned out real nice now because I get a wonderful pension and, mm-hmm. you know, a number of things like that. But a number of years into that, my wife decided that she really didn't want to be in the marriage anymore, so she quit. She didn't leave, she just quit. She wanted all the trappings and all the external, you know, stuff. She just didn't really want to be in a relationship with me anymore. She was very bitter and angry. And so I went through 5 years of trying to hold a marriage together.
Right.
Until finally a conservative Christian counselor said, Greg, you got to get out. Hmm. Or she's going to take you down. And a couple of years before that, my brain chemistry had really given out. I ended up on antidepressants.
Right.
And that's been the thing that I took out of that first marriage was clinical depression. So now for 20 years, you know, I've had this whole thing of clinical depression that I've carried with me.
Oh, is that right? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was kind of interesting, you know, as when we finally got to the place and I said, you know, I can't just separate from my wife and act like I think we can get it back together.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I'm going to file for divorce because it's the only thing I can do and still feel like I'm walking in integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I did that, the pastor of the church effectively extended to me the left foot of fellowship.
Right.
in a church where I had been in a leadership position for most of the years that we'd been there.
Wow.
And I kind of thought, I'm not sure I want to hang around with Christians anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And went through a period of real... In some ways, I was really isolated. I had moved to Seattle because I'd been promoted and was working up there. And it was kind of interesting. I'm living by myself in a little apartment. And it was kind of interesting because the way I like to put it is I walked away from God, but I'm not so sure God walked away from me.
Right.
And it was through the novels of a guy named Andrew Greeley, who was this kind of renegade Catholic priest,
mm-hmm.
that in his novels, you know, God is a God who loves people so passionately that he would break his own rules,
right,
in order to do so,
mm-hmm.
and somehow that had an effect on my life. Within about a year, I met my second wife. And this is the early days of AOL and all that kind of stuff, but we met through the internet, and she's from Alberta but was living in British Columbia at the time, and we managed to get together and get to know each other, and within a couple of weeks met each other, and about 10 weeks later got married.
Wow.
And it's been a healing, blessing kind of thing, and mixed two families, each with a couple of kids.
Right.
And amazingly, all of our kids would rather spend time with each other than almost anybody else.
Wow.
After years of course, scrapping and all that kind of stuff. But mm-hmm.
How long have you been married?
16 years now.
Okay.
So, you know, the kids are all gone. They're all doing their own things. They're all in various places in their life. We've got a couple of engineers and a social worker and a school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But having a great time with them. But it, you know, it's kind of interesting. We've been in a PCUSA, Presbyterian, fairly Middle Road Presbyterian Church for quite a few years now, about 15 years. It has a tendency to be somewhat evangelical in terms of the of its approach to the Bible and that. But when I think of others in the group and some of the stuff that they were exposed to, you know, I've had exposure and considered myself for many years to be an evangelical. I don't really anymore. But I was never really exposed to the hellfire brimstone kind of preaching that so many talk about.
Right.
It just never was really part of that. But it was really when I listened to that book, God Wins.
Right.
By Rob
Bell.
And I began to really think about it, and I thought, you know, his arguments are very convincing about heaven and hell. And I thought, you know, I never really had thought about that much. But when I went back and looked in the Bible, and I said, I don't see the evidence here for the church's normal doctrine on heaven and hell. And this whole thing that heaven and hell have something to do with after you're dead, you know, Jesus was never seemed to be focused that way. And I began to more just read the Gospels and get out of Paul and get out of the Old Testament a lot. And but I found myself in my deconstruction being very thoughtful and careful about how I do that. And so, you know, it kind of started with heaven and hell, and then as I really looked at the Bible, you know, it was really clear that, you know, I'd always had questions about things like, you know, Jesus in one place says, if they're not with us, they're against us, and then a page later says, if they're not against us, they're with us.
Right.
You know, I'm kind of going, how does that all fit together?
Yeah, know? Two different gospels perspectives on the same idea.
Well, no,
yeah.
That's in the same gospel.
Okay.
In the same book. It's just a chapter difference.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, that's, you know, some of this stuff I really wonder. I'm at the place now where I really, really kind of believe that the Bible's made up of stuff that people wrote down because they really felt like it was right and true, but that every page of it is infused with the cultural perspectives of the people who wrote it, and the prevailing views of their time.
Right.
And I kind of think that it started going wrong about the time Jesus left. That, you know, this and Paul was, I think, a big part of that, because Paul really set a lot of the doctrine in the church through his letters. And they're so prevalent in, you know, in preaching.
Right.
And Paul was a Pharisee. And he was a Pharisee who got saved, but he still had all of that foundation in him.
Right.
And I see that foundation coming out in his letters again and again. And so, you know, I kind of have backed up and said, wait a minute, you know, I'm really interested in knowing about Jesus, but I'm not so interested in everybody else's slant on theology.
Right.
And
so, Greg, are you still going to the PCUSA church?
I go there now mostly only when I'm playing music, because I'm a timpanist and a percussionist, and I accompany some of the music groups, and they'll have an orchestra periodically.
Okay.
And so when I'm playing, I go. Most of the time, I don't go if I'm not playing.
I was when I was preparing for ordination in the Presbyterian Church in Canada, I studied at McGill University, which is not far from the U.S. border, and I was given a student charge down in upstate New York. Two country PCUSA churches, and they were mainline, but they leaned evangelical. The two congregations there, and that's also the same congregation same denomination that I believe Eugene Peterson came out of. So,
I believe he did.
Yeah. So you're still in the Christian camp, majorly deconstructing, and that you. you wouldn't call yourself an evangelical, but you're trying to listen to all the voices.
I really don't even call myself a Christian. I haven't I haven't come out to the, you know, a lot of people at church and said, you know what, I'm not really a Christian anymore.
Right.
I still really have a strong draw to Jesus.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not, at this point, I would say I'm probably kind of a Trinitarian follower of Jesus in terms of the way that I'm kind of sensing that things are, but not a Christian. I certainly don't buy into the culture anymore. And I was very deeply in the culture for a long time.
Would you say your devotion to Jesus, when you said you had that conversion-like experience and you said Jesus showed up, is that still very real to you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and several other experiences that I had over the years where it seemed like God really was involved in a situation, in a powerful kind of a way, and that... Those experiences are kind of the thing probably that still is holding me to Jesus, that I'm kind of going, I can't deny that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there's a lot of folks in TLS who grew up in evangelical Christianity and kind of, you know, and said the sinner's prayer when they were five and were there all that time and never had any kind of a notable experience with God,
mm-hmm.
Other than just believing what they were taught, mm-hmm. and have kind of walked away now and said, it was all just a bunch of hooey.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that keeps me from doing that is the fact that I've had these experiences,
mm-hmm.
and it's really hard for me to figure out what to do with those experiences,
yeah.
if I was to just walk away.
It's interesting because Anselm, the philosopher theologian from the Middle Ages, he coined a phrase, faith seeks understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of see these things happening where people have an experience that sort of inspires some kind of faith, and then they spend the rest of their life trying to understand it and make it make sense. And then there's others who go the other way. They have understanding and they're trying to find the experience to match it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I think of Mother Teresa, who had, when she was young, had these incredible experiences with God,
mm-hmm.
you know, that were, from her description, pretty supernatural kind of experiences with God.
Mm-hmm.
And then went for nearly her whole lifetime calling out to God and getting nothing back.
Yeah.
And
it's a powerful story.
Know, yeah, and in her writings that came out after she died, some of her stuff, just mm-hmm. being in despair over it.
Yeah.
And yet continuing to walk down that line. And I have a tendency, I don't think she ever did a lot of real deconstruction. I think, and part of it was because she was Roman Catholic, and that the form of the structure of the Catholic Church, kind of, she stayed within that
mm-hmm.
within that form, which kind of mm-hmm. gave her some sort of stability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have a tendency to go, I don't necessarily need to understand everything, but some things just absolutely don't make much sense.
Right, right.
And I can't find a way to put them together to where they stay together in my mind.
Yeah. Greg, you're retired?
I retired after 25 years of full-time in the uh-huh. in the National Guard. So technically I retired from the Army and get a pension from that. And then I also get VA disability, and I've started drawing some of my Social Security, so
uh-huh.
it really allows me a lot of freedom. And then I do some coaching on the side.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that. We have just like a minute left, and just let us know what you do with your time now.
Yeah, I love coaching.
Uh-huh.
And coaching is a kind of a thing where you're not advising people, you're not telling people what to do, you're working with people to help them find what they already know.
Right.
but maybe don't know that they know.
Right.
And help them discover how clever and how genius they really are inside. And and one area that I really enjoy doing that is with leaders in the nonprofit area. And I've been working with one nonprofit CEO for the last year, and it looks like I'm going to start to work with some of her other leaders in her organization here pretty soon. But I also work with individuals. I've got a couple of writers, and I had an artist that I worked with who are kind of trying to get their little businesses going, and have also been working here for the last few months with Gio.
Okay.
I've been coaching Gio.
Uh-huh.
And so it's not something that I'm, you know, trying to do 40 hours a week. It's I have a couple of days a week usually that I do coaching like that, and I really enjoy that.
Well, cool.
And it seems like, you know, the folks I work with, you know, really get a lot out of it. So
yeah. Well, awesome. You sound like a very wise person and got a lot of experience, and you're sort of inclusive in the way you think too. So I can see how you're very,
I'm very much, you know, whatever path that you're on is great because that's your path.
Yeah.
And, it's not up to me to figure out what path you should be on. That's up to you to figure that out.
Wow. Perfect.
I think the big thing, one of the big things that changed for me in becoming a coach was going from a place of having a strength of knowledge and really knowing a lot and having comprehensive understanding of a lot of things to going, you know what, I don't really need to know. And I can be okay with not knowing.
Yeah.
And that really helps in working with other people because I don't know what's going on inside them. It's what's going on inside them is part of them, not part of me.
Well, Greg, that pretty much sums up the value of TLS too. It's sort of the same approach to people, and I think that's the most powerful way to release people's individual energies and wisdom and everything like that is when they're given that kind of free space where they're accepted as they are.
And you know, I've always kind of been an encourager, and I like doing that. And when I find the space to do that within TLS, that's what I do.
Yep.
Not my job to parse apart other people's arguments.
Yeah. Hey, Greg, it's been really nice talking to you. I'm looking forward to getting this up just in a little while and letting other people hear you.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, take care. We'll see you at the Lasting Supper.
Okay, see you there.
Yeah, okay. Bye.
Bye.
Well, everyone, that was Gregory Leese. Thanks, Gregory, for talking with us today. If you want to talk with me and be interviewed for a Meet a Mentor podcast, just let me know. We'd love to get you on here. We'll see you at the Lasting Supper, guys. Bye.